just started recording since we don't have much time to dilly dally.
Yeah, so that's true.
As I'm sure the listeners already are aware, it's been an event so far to get to this point.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're all of them, every single one of them has been sitting by, because we usually release the episode about now, maybe a little later than now. They're all waiting. They want our material, and we're late on it.
Yeah, everyone's wondering what's going on.
Yep, it's going to start there. We're going to be trending on Twitter in a minute.
Right. Well, if you listened to last episode, which I'm sure everyone did, the end of that was extremely real and genuine. We were going through the episode, and I was like, I should check to see how much time we have left. And I switched over to the window of Zencastr, and I think we were, if we had, 60 minutes before we started that recording that episode, I think we were at like 59 minutes and 50 seconds, if not later than that.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to try to test to see what happened if we went over our limit.
Yeah, we didn't want to lose the whole episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Or go behind like some sort of paywall.
Yeah.
So what do we do? We tried, since we're out of time for this month on Zencastr, we tried like a Google Hangout thing.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah.
That was terrible.
Yeah.
You weren't even coming in clear. When I could hear you talk, it was like choppy.
And your audio was bad.
Yeah. It
sounded very muffled and everything. And so we're like, this isn't going to work. So we're like, all right, let's just try Skype. So I downloaded on this computer, signed in, I'm waiting for Slappy, and you're like, my computer's rebooting. And then you tried on your phone, and every time you would try to answer the call on your phone, it would drop the call. And I guess you got your computer booted back up, and it worked.
Yeah.
So it's funny because we used to do this on Skype. We used to do it on all sorts of stuff. We've been doing this for, what, 5, 6 years? Wait, no, 7 years?
Wow.
And like,
yeah, 7 years. Holy smokes.
I feel like we had less problems 5, 6, 7 years ago than we do today.
Yeah, that is definitely true.
Who knows? Maybe
we should just log on and record, and it was not an issue.
Right. So I don't know.
Well, nothing's going to get me in a better mood than reading stuff from the White House. Let me tell you that.
Yeah. I have no idea where we left off.
Ah, man, I was just going to ask you. I know, did we leave off with the end of the claims, or did we respond to some of the claims?
I think we left off.
Yeah, I think we left off with the claims, and then this week is the reality of crypto, or is that last week?
No, we started that. So maybe what we should do is just go back to the blue box.
The blue box?
Box 8.2. How does Bitcoin work?
8-2. All right. We got some. All right.
Because we ought to go back and figure out where we actually are.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll do the blue box.
And we'll, because we've been waiting to do this.
That's true.
This is going to take like 10 weeks to get through.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to make it 10 weeks.
If he dies, he dies.
Exactly. All right, Joel, do you want to learn about how Bitcoin works?
Yep.
All right, well, let's just get into it. And we'll go. We'll skip the sports talk for this week.
All right.
All right, here we go. Box 8-2. How does Bitcoin work? This box explains how Bitcoin functions. As it was
if,
the
if
first.
If you couldn't figure that out already.
Well, this is a really bad college paper, or maybe a high school paper. I don't know. Okay. This box explains how Bitcoin functions. As it was the first, oh my word, it just...
That's just such a poorly constructed sentence.
Yeah, all right. Okay, I'm just not even going to read that first part of the sentence. As it was the first crypto asset. Subsequent crypto assets have often incorporated key features from this design. Bitcoin relies on several innovations, including the novel use of a hash function, a well-established cryptographic technique. What is a hash function? A hash function, which is sometimes called
I would get in trouble if I wrote a paper like this in high school. What is a hash function? A hash function. Like, you don't have to ask what it is. You're going to say it.
And I'm thinking, well, since they didn't do that in the rest, I'm guessing like one of the guys on the team had to write this, and it's just really bad. And he probably had like a word count and he had to get in. So he's like, oh, I could just restate the title in my first sentence and I could ask a question. I don't know. What is a hash function? A hash function, which is sometimes called a one-way algorithm or a trapdoor algorithm, uses a mathematical algorithm to take an input, for example, a number, a string of letters, and produce an output that satisfies three requirements. One, reproducibility, or running the algorithm on the same input always produces the same output. Two, irreversibility, or even knowing the algorithm, it is not possible to easily invert the output to recover what the input was. And three, collusion avoidance, or any unique input string must produce exactly one unique output. This is a one-way function in that there is no efficient way to recover the input from just the output. The only way would be to hash every possible input to see if it matches the output. Figure 8-I gives examples of hashed output. Anything to comment on here?
No, just that was poorly written, but fine.
Basically,
a hash is you put whatever information you want in and it spits out something that is basically unpredictable on the other end.
Right.
But it always produces that same output.
Like if you put one through the algorithm, it's going to give you a string of letters and numbers and or whatever. And if you put two through it, it's not going to look anything like one.
Right. Yeah. So if I have
there's not a way to be like this one is one more than that one, you know, it's just totally at least seemingly random numbers and letters.
Right. So if I hash the input Rollo McFlugel and then I that's going to produce some sort of like random letters and numbers. And then if I hash the output,
Rollo McFlugel.
Rolla?
No, yeah, sure. Rolla. Well, I was just saying Roll, R-O-L-L.
Oh, Rollo McFlugel. Yeah, it's just like you change one letter of Rollo McFlugel. It's not like it's going to just be like change one digit in the output. It's just going to be something completely different. And the only way, if I gave you the output and I said, all right, Slappy, what's the input? You would just have to guess
all kinds of words and phrases inputs, and whatever. Yeah.
Right. Until you got the output that matched the output that I gave you. There's no way to just kind of reverse it. It's not like an algebraic equation where if I say 2x plus 3 equals y, if I gave you the value of y, you'd be easily able to compute the value of x and vice versa. But a hash function does not function that way.
Hence the one way.
Yep.
Okay. The hash function is usually quick and has many applications. For example, most websites do not store a person's actual password on their server. Instead, they store a hash of the password. That way, if there were ever a hack of their systems, the hackers would only have the hashed versions, which would not work as passwords and could not easily be used to determine passwords. When you log onto a website, its server hashes the password you enter and compares that with what is stored in its database, and only lets you in if they match. Note that the change of the input, as seemingly small as from hello to hello, and that's a lowercase h to a capital H, usually creates a drastically different hash, and that a vastly different phrase produces a hash that is equally random. Two key participants in the Bitcoin space are users and miners.
Whoa, okay.
Just throw that in there.
Yeah, I was just about to compliment. It's like, all right, well, they just said what we just said. And yeah. Then I
where did that come from?
This is terrible.
That's the end of, that's not a new paragraph. That's the last sentence in that paragraph I just read.
Oh, my goodness. I don't even know what to say.
I know, there's nothing to say. It's just, this is written like a high school paper.
It's written like no one's going to read it, but they have to put words in there.
Which, let's be honest, there's only been two people to read this much of this paper so far.
Not even these people's moms are reading this.
No, they don't care. They told their mom they did it. Their mom said, oh, that's wonderful, son or daughter. And thanks. Yeah, I'll take a look. Oh, that was great.
Right.
Because they didn't read it. I mean, should I just continue? There's nothing much to say there.
No, I just keep going.
Users. Crypto assets generally require a user to have a wallet. A digital wallet is a software application, piece of hardware, or other device or service that stores a user's public and private cryptographic keys, which allow users to interact with one or more blockchains and send and receive crypto assets. Users can have custodial wallets, which are provided and maintained by an intermediary or third-party provider, or non-custodial wallets, also known as unhosted wallets, for which users are responsible for their own wallets and private keys. For Bitcoin, wallets have an associated private key, typically a random generated string of digits which can be hashed to derive a public key. The public key, similarly, can be used to generate the wallet's address using a different known hash function. Anyone can initiate a transfer to a wallet if they know its address. This is used as either the source or destination of transfers on the Bitcoin blockchain. However, to send crypto assets, one needs to know the private key for the wallet that is sending. In particular, if someone wanting to send crypto assets can construct the transaction, create a hash of it, and combine that with a private key to create a digital signature of the transaction. Did I read that right? A useful analogy is that a public key is akin to your home address, while the private key is the physical key to your home. It is the difference between letting someone know where you live versus giving them access to your house. Any node of the network can then compare the hash of the digital signature with the public key, and with the hash of the transaction data, and determine if the transaction is valid. Nodes will reject any invalid transactions, so private keys are required to transfer crypto assets.
We should not have tried to do this when we're both tired and already really frustrated. I don't know if there's anything really incorrect in there, but I feel like someone like leaned on the keyboard and just like deleted a lot of stuff, like talking about hash functions and all suddenly talk about wallets. I guess I kind of try to go back and explain some of it, but it's just, wow. And then again, just like this guy loves to throw in random things. at the end, like, all of a sudden saying those will reject any invalid transactions. So the private keys are required to transfer crypto assets. Like, yeah. I don't even know how to parse any of this because it's just so all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, he started out with talking about custodial, you know, it's just all over the place. I agree. Yeah.
Instead of going over this in painful detail, if you don't understand how Bitcoin works from a technical standpoint, just go to 10hoursofbitcoin.com.
Yeah, that's your best bet.
And there's some good videos there you can watch in, towards the beginning of how Bitcoin works under the hood. Yeah. I think if you just go on YouTube and search for how Bitcoin works under the hood, it should pop up, and that's a pretty good video.
Okay. From the perspective of the user, who typically uses a wallet app to manage this process, all that is needed...
This is just like... From the perspective of the user, who typically uses a wallet app to manage this process, what else are you using?
I mean, I guess you could do it manually.
Yeah, with paper and pencil.
I don't know.
It's just this like feigned, like, knowledge about what's going on. Oh, well, you typically do this.
Yeah.
It's brutal. All right.
This is like painful to read. From the perspective of the user who typically uses a wallet app to manage this process, all that is needed is the knowledge of the addresses of the sending and receiving accounts, the private key of sending, the amount, and a fee. The fee incentivizes miners to include the user's transaction in an upcoming block. A transaction with a high fee is more likely to be included in upcoming blocks than one with a low or zero fee. This means that transactions with low fees may take days to be processed or may not be processed at all.
Yeah.
I guess.
It's just written like someone who just doesn't understand what's going on at all. Again, nothing that's like incorrect necessarily, but it's like they just have this information and they just try to like cobble it into words without understanding really what's going on. So it comes across as just weird. But all that said, I don't know if you noticed, Slappy, but the mempool, you can get onto the next block with one sat per byte fee as of right now. There's a lot of the mempool's pretty filled up with a whole lot of one sat per byte transactions, but it looks like the last couple blocks you get on for pretty cheap.
Yeah, I use pretty low fees typically, and have not had too many issues.
Yep.
But I guess technically it's correct. Miner.
Again, I mean, this would be like, I mean, I don't even know how to, what would be a good example of comparing this with something to say, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like if you were trying to explain football to someone and say like, oh, well, there's a oblong, you know, bumpy inflatable device that is transferred across a grass surface. And, oh, by the way, there's a team on each of players on each sideline. And if An interception is when that device is captured before it touches the ground as it moves forward. The offensive line is a, like, I'm not saying anything that's incorrect, but it's just very obvious. I like don't understand how football works at all, and I'm trying to explain it.
Yeah.
All right. They're going to explain minors to us now.
Yes, they are. Miners. Period. The key part of the Bitcoin ecosystem that is different from physical currency is that there are no central trusted arbiters of truth. Instead, the system operates by consensus among nodes of the network about what the truth is, i.e., the distribution of Bitcoins across all wallets. This means, in theory, that governance of the cryptocurrency is arbitrated by network participants, not a central authority. Although control in some blockchains is more centralized, as there may be significant concentration among network participants that effectively consolidates governance between a few parties.
So let's see how long it takes for them to actually start mentioning my, like, this is the miner section, and that first introduction had nothing to do with mining.
Had absolutely nothing at all to do with mining.
That's again, really weird. Like, not really anything wrong with what was in there, but just,
well, it's weird to start the paragraph miners, period, and then not tell what a miner is or does or works. It's just,
it'd be like, all right, I'm explaining football and we're going to go through all of the teams in the NFL. Yeah. And then I talk about penalties.
Right. Like, okay. All right. I'll continue here. The Bitcoin blockchain uses what is called the SHA-256 algorithm, developed by the National Security Agency and the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which, for any text input, always produces a 64-digit, 256-bit, hexadecimal output string, Brown 2002. The Bitcoin blockchain and many other cryptocurrencies use proof of work method to achieve a consensus among all the nodes of the network. Still haven't talked about miners.
I mean, they're kind of talking about miners there with the proof of work, but that's just sure. Like,
they just mentioned it though.
It's just, yeah, they're just like mentioning random concepts without like, if you don't know what proof of work is.
If I did not know what a miner was, I still wouldn't have any clue what a miner does.
Yeah.
Now, maybe they go into all that, but like, it's just a weird way to write it.
Yeah.
Like, you think they would, I don't know, critique their writing, but like, explain what a miner is, and then you can go into some more detail about it.
Right. Yeah. I am... Actually, at this point, I'm pretty. I didn't think it was gonna be this bad.
It's, yeah. Well, just sit tight. Miners monitor the network and maintain a pool of transactions that are yet to be validated. In a proof of work network, the network's miners are competing to be the ones to successfully mine the next block of transactions in the chain. The actual way this is accomplished is that the miner puts together a candidate block of transactions to include, as well as a block header, or some metadata for the block. These metadata include the hash of the last successfully mined block of the chain, the version of software used, and some technical parameters that are explained just below. The target difficulty, a digital signature unique to the block of transactions they are including, the nonce. They then take all the information in the block header, combine it into one string, and put it through the SHA-256 algorithm to get a hash of that information.
Yeah, so if it wasn't already clear and obvious, like, this person is just going on, like, Bitcoin wiki and just pulling him for like just finding information and then just kind of like rewriting it without having any clue what's going on. And that's why this is such a disaster. Like some like. And I don't know if this is like, I wonder maybe they just picked the guy like, all right, you're whoever was in charge of writing this or like, all right, Frank, you're the guy that understands Bitcoin the most, so you write this, or they just like kind of randomly picked. Either way,
they are the
it's extremely
numbers.
Clear that the knowledge about Bitcoin of the people that are writing this is basically zero.
Yeah.
These people have no idea how Bitcoin works at all. And it doesn't necessarily mean that this is this is representative of all of the people in the government. Like there might be some, you know, someone in the SEC or IRA, you know, whatever, the FBI that has a little bit better handling on it and they can, you know, sort through this stuff more efficiently and easily. But I mean, this is coming from the office of the president. I think it's reasonable to have an expectation. Say what you want about the state, say what you want about the president, whether it's this president or the presidency in general. Say what you want about all of that. You expect some degree of competency. That even if the people that are going to write this report, they might have to deal with a section. So it's 500 pages. It's, you know, one guy's not going to sit down and write this whole thing. And there's a lot of esoteric information and concepts and everything else that's not just in the Bitcoin section, but in the entirety of this report. And so it would be a lot to expect one person or even a small group of people to be able to do this all on their own. However, to outsource this, assuming they outsourced it, I hope they outsourced it because I hope they at least recognize that, man, I don't really understand this. I better not try to write this myself. To outsource it to someone who is just totally and utterly clueless is really an embarrassment. And if they didn't outsource it and they just decided to try to do this themselves, it's also an utter embarrassment. And like I said a minute ago, this doesn't mean that everyone in the government is as bad on Bitcoin as these people are. But it doesn't exactly paint a picture that the government in general or at large has competency here. And that I think you're much, much, much more likely to find someone in a position of power in the state that has anything to do with Bitcoin. I think you're likely that they're going to tend to not understand it at all.
Yeah, I think that's right. Well, you ready to learn about the competition aspect?
Nope, but we're going to anyway.
Yep. So, in case you're wondering, here is the competition aspect. The nonce field is a number that miners can choose arbitrarily. Their goal is to pick a nonce such that the resulting hash, a hexadecimal number, is less than the target, also a hexadecimal number, currently set by the blockchain. Given how the hashing process works, there is no way to do this efficiently. A miner must continue trying different numbers until they are successful. Since the nonce must be an 8-digit hexadecimal number, a little over 4 billion nonces can be tried. If no possibility is successful, the miner needs to get creative in how to try new hashes against the target, such as changing the set of transactions that are included in the block, which changes the Merkle root in the header, thus changing the proposed block's hash. Well, finding a valid nonce and set of transaction requires a large amount of brute force computing power. Verifying a proposed block is valid is trivial. Nodes just need to compute the hash of the proposed block and compare it with the target. And this means that once a block is found to be valid and is broadcast across the network, a consensus can quickly be reached if it is a valid block. At that point, it is added to the chain and competition commences on adding the next block of the transactions, the next element of truth in the system.
So, yeah, lots of words in there. Yeah. So basically, what the miners are doing is that depending on the difficulty target, which is based on how many miners are, how many hashes are being done by the collection of miners, there's a certain output target. There's the output, but you have to guess a number that is it's less than the target number. So it's like this is kind of actually difficult to explain. Mm-hmm. So depending on how difficult, how many miners are in there and how many hashes are being guessed, the difficulty in guessing, it would be like if I said, all right, Slappy, pick a number. I'm thinking of a number between I have a hat full of numbers between one and 1,000. And
I have to draw them randomly.
Right. You're drawing them randomly, and I need you to pick a number that is less than 100.
Right. So I'll keep picking numbers out until I get under 100, then I get the block.
If another person enters the game, let's say 10 more people enter the game, and now all of a sudden I'm going to say, in order for you to get the reward, since there's like 10 more people picking, and so you would expect that it's your 10 times... it's going to be 10 times easier for you to find the number.
It's becoming way too quick.
Right. So instead of being, you have to find a number under 100, I'm going to say you got to find a number under 10. And so that way you're going to find that number in about the same amount of time as just you picking a number under 100.
Right.
And then as this game progresses, as people drop in and drop out, that difficulty changes. Difficulty being the kind of the number, the maximum number I set as something that is earns you the reward if you pick the right slot of numbers. So that's really what the mining algorithm is doing. Or not the algorithm, but the kind of the difficulty and what miners are trying to do. They're trying to guess a number that produces an output that satisfies the condition of mining. So basically, like, the consensus rules say, all right, you got to find a number under this. And they start just brute force guessing, hoping that they find it. And when they do, that's why it's like when you're mining and you're trying to solve this puzzle, you're not really trying to find some one discrete value. Solving a block does not mean that you found this one,
the right number,
unique value. Yeah. You're just finding a value that is less than something.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the difficulty, you know, that number will get bigger or smaller. It's basically how many, like, in a binary, if the difficulty or the target was a binary number, it's like how many zeros are on the front of the number. Determines how the difficulty. I might have just explained that as poorly as these writers, but...
No, I think it gave a little clarity. I mean, what you're changing is the nonce, and that changes the hash output.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I forget. Yeah, the nonce is kind of
goofy. That's how I understand it.
Necessarily.
Yeah, it's like the number that you add to the header. That's just like a guess. And right. So all your information gets hashed, but the nonce changes, which changes the output. And when you find that number that's lower, then you get the block. That's how I understand it.
Yep.
Okay. I'll continue. Okay. Miners receive two types of compensation for the work that they do. The fees that are included in the transactions they choose to put in a block, and the miner reward, defined by the blockchain's protocol. For Bitcoin, the mining reward was initially 50 Bitcoin for every mined block, but this is diminished due to a halving rule. This rule limits the total supply of Bitcoin to 21 million over the lifetime of the coin and means that every 4 years, the payout for mining a new block falls in half. The reward was 6.25 Bitcoin as of December 31st, 2022, but given prevailing prices, this was worth over $100,000. The target difficulty parameter is adjusted every 2 weeks to ensure that a new coin is mined roughly every 10 minutes. As the number of resources dedicated to mining has increased, higher levels of difficulty have been required to keep pace. In the 5 years before October 2022, the number of attempts to mine a typical block of the Bitcoin chain increased by a factor of 19. Once the maximum supply of 21 million Bitcoins is reached, which is projected to occur in about 2140, miners will only benefit from transaction fees. Well, that was another poorly written paragraph.
I know. I'm just not even going to bother.
Like, it's so bad.
Yeah. It's like
throw ideas together.
Like, explaining Bitcoin is kind of difficult because there's like everything involved and it kind of works together and there's no like decent starting point
right
to go necessarily, but like you could do a better job than this.
I agree. When you're just writing in this little inset blue box and you got to put how Bitcoin works in this box, it's not going to be easy. I'll be charitable there, but it's just not. I don't like the way it's written. Why does the blockchain mechanism work? Once the blockchain is running, suppose a bad actor wanted to modify the history of the blockchain by, for example, inserting a fraudulent transaction in an earlier block. In theory, this would not work, since any other node of the network could immediately verify that this block did not previously belong in the chain because no subsequent block would point to its changed hash as being its predecessor. So, a bad actor would need to recompute the entire chain from the fraudulent block to the current one with new hashes, which would require an inordinate amount of computing power. This highlights the origins of blockchain technology in ensuring trust among mutually suspicious groups. Figure 8-II demonstrates how a blockchain is formed.
I mean, well, it's the theme of this whole thing. They're not necessarily saying anything incorrect.
How does the blockchain mechanism work? And then it says a bad actor would have to modify the... like. Right.
Yeah, it's true. Just, this person has no idea what is going on. All right, we have one more paragraph. Let's get through this, and then I'm done.
Yeah. Many other blockchains have a design similar to that of Bitcoin, although with different parameters and features such as smart contracts. Ethereum, for example, allows more daily transactions than Bitcoin, is calibrated to have blocks added every 12 seconds, and recently switched its consensus protocol to be less energy intensive.
That was one sentence you just read, and there were about 15 comments and 25 different thoughts.
Yeah, and had nothing to do with it. It's just like a complete non sequitur, just thrown in there. An important criticism of crypto assets is their energy intensity. A more complete discussion of technological options of blockchain design is beyond the scope of this chapter. Well, let's be thankful for that.
Yeah. All right. That destroyed my soul a little bit.
Well, it's good, though, because we've read this now. Everyone knows how Bitcoin works.
Yep. I don't know what to say. Like, I'm shocked because I was kind of thinking they were just going to be wrong about stuff. Although I wasn't sure that, but.
Well, I guess that's. I would say I'm actually pleasantly surprised because, like you said, I thought they were just going to be flat out wrong. They just don't know what they're talking about.
Right. It seems like they actually went to sources that were correct, but they just did the seventh grade book report kind of deal of just like, I'm just going to.
There'd be a lot of red marks. Random
thoughts that I found and things and just kind of string some words together.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's all I can muster. This was what, part 4?
Probably.
And this is episode
one more previous episode plus one.
Yeah, 353, I think.
Ooh.
So, we didn't even really do the introduction.
No, we didn't.
But that's fine. Show notes page for this episode will be mcfluga.com/353. If you want to go, like, maybe people are, like, going there and being, like, they're making, like, they went into, like, a chat GPT thing and just said, explain Bitcoin to me in the worst possible way.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, I think Chat GPT would do a better job. Not positive of that.
Unless you instructed it to do a poor job.
That's what I'm saying. So you added that. So that was good. That was smart.
So, yeah, if you don't believe us that it's this insane, go on the show notes page and click on that economic report of the president and read it for yourself. Yeah. But
thankfully, Biden knows how Bitcoin works now.
Yeah, maybe Joe Biden. You know what? I'm actually kind of – I may take back what we said early on and say, if you think Joe Biden wrote this, well, based on what I'm reading, I kind of think he did.
I mean, he might have. Like, could you imagine, though, like, seriously? Like, let's pretend we have a – let's say, like, if this was given to Barack Obama, do you think he reads it? Do you think he cares?
No, but, like, if he read that, I think he'd be like, you're kidding, right? With just how poorly it's written. Whether or not,
I would hope so. At least he's, like, an intellectual guy, I think, right? Like, he'd do all the schooling and all that.
Yeah, I would think he'd be able to string together a couple sentences.
Like, Biden would just be, like, drooling all over himself and, like, blow his nose with the paper or something. Like, he doesn't know where he is.
Right. So, but I don't know.
I don't know.
But, yeah, we're going to wrap it up here. I need to get to bed.
Yeah. Sorry to everyone who's been waiting for the past hour for this episode to be released.
We all know that you're out there. It's basically everyone, because that's everyone listens to this. Yeah. So, all right. Thanks for listening. We will catch you next week.
Peace.